What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my two co-hosts, John Kegley and David Drogemeyer. We're three writers who started at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and we started covering the Chargers four seasons ago, doing our own Facebook live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly, and this is our second season with the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, a lot to get into today. It is Tuesday, so that means we're going to do our what went right and what went wrong, and it's one of the few weeks where the what went right segment is going to go longer than the what went wrong segment, and even though, you know, John Kegley might have something to say about that, we'll see how much he has for us in what went wrong. I mean, he's the expert. But we're also going to talk about the weird news surrounding Denzel Perryman and Roderick Teamer, who were both held out of the game in a non-injury related way on Sunday against the Jaguars. So we'll talk about that because Eric Williams came out with a report today specifically about that. So we'll start there before getting into what went right and what went wrong. So let's go ahead and get into it, guys. This is your Locked On Chargers lead story. I'm Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer. The news of the day is the story surrounding linebacker Denzel Perryman and safety Roderick Teamer, the undrafted free agent out of Tulane. Both players were held out on Sunday because of a non-injury related issue. So we are wondering what was going on with that because both players were sent back to Los Angeles and did not stay with the team. Just a really weird situation. I mean, we've been covering the Chargers for four seasons. We haven't really seen this type of situation, especially in the Anthony Lynn era. So the report from Eric Williams today was that both players missed a meeting and that's why they were sent home and did not get to play in the game. So David, kind of just a weird story that we didn't find out about till the next week. For these two guys, I mean, one an undrafted free agent, Roderick Teamer, who had some up and down time on the field for the Chargers and is kind of left without a position now that the Chargers are healthy at safety. I mean, probably behind Jalen Watkins. Denzel Perryman, who is coming off, you know, maybe the best game of his career, had the highest Pro Football Focus grade in the NFL last week, and now he's getting penalized for missing a meeting and missing a game.
Yeah, no, it's definitely crazy. I mean, when the report came out and it just said they're not going to play in the game and it's not injury related, we're like, what's going on? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, Coach Lynn was being very hush-hush about it, which I understand he was trying to keep things in-house and not let things get out. But, I mean, it just begs the question, like, what did these guys do? I mean, you miss a team meeting, okay, I got it, but you know, that seems like an egregious punishment for missing a team meeting. I mean, it just begs the question, did they do something else? Is that really all that happened? Is it just that was them just missing a meeting causing them not to play in the game? I mean, they made the trip to Florida. And apparently, you know, them just missing this meeting caused them to miss out on a game. And what a game to miss out on, Daniel. I mean, the Chargers go out there and handle their business handedly. And I mean, especially with Denzel Perryman, I mean, I know he signed to a 2-year contract, but, you know, in his stead, Drew Tranquil comes in and plays extremely well. And, you know, the more chances that Tranquil gets to play on the field is going to take playing time away from Denzel Perryman. And, you know, Tom Telesco usually builds a ripcord into any contract that he makes. So just because it's a 2-year deal for Denzel does not mean that he might not find his way out if things like this continue to happen.
And it's just an off-the-field situation that doesn't happen much for the Chargers. I mean, you're not hearing very much come out of there with the Chargers getting in trouble off the field. I mean, Derwin James getting robbed last year was really the biggest news off of the field, and it's really hard to blame him for that. I mean, he was a victim in that circumstance, so you have to wonder what else could have happened because there's really nothing that we've heard surrounding this situation, but it does seem extreme for them to get sent home and miss a game for missing a meeting, but maybe we'll still find out more about it. Right now, it's a pretty mysterious situation, but definitely a setback for these two players. It's not good in the coach's eyes when you're getting sent all the way back to Los Angeles and miss a game. The other news of the week is that Jerry Tillery was a healthy scratch for the last game against the Jaguars. It's been a very rough year for the rookie. I mean, ranking almost last in the NFL in tackles for as many defensive players who have gotten as regular snaps as he has. For him to be a healthy scratch for this game in the last four games of the season, where you're probably really trying to see what's going to happen and what you have in this young player, it has to be a hard thing for a rookie like that to have happen, David. I mean, definitely not a good sign for the rookie. Anthony Lynn talked about it a little bit in a press conference yesterday. He said he explained to him what the situation was. They were going with a different look defensively, but either way, it still has to be tough for the rookie.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. He obviously, as we noted, hasn't had the type of rookie year that anyone really expected or anticipated, and himself chief among them, I'm sure. I mean, he's got, I think, a sack and a half on the season, but he's been mostly forgettable, and, you know, that's unfortunate, and him losing games and losing playing time is not going to help going into next year. I mean, the jury's still out on Jerry, I mean, but as a first-round pick, you want to see somebody come in and make an impact, and unfortunately, he just hasn't done that, and him, you know, being a healthy scratch to, you know, instead of Sylvester Williams, it's just, it's not a good confidence builder for him moving forward. Hopefully he's able to play these last three games, be able to put something positive on the stat sheet, build some momentum for him going into year two, and hopefully, you know, he goes into the off season and works on some little things to help him come back next year and really be the type of player we all thought he could be when the Chargers drafted him in the first round.
And that's the problem with a player like Jerry Tillery, is it's so hard to not have expectations for a player that the Chargers drafted in the first round. Although it was a very late first round draft pick, but the top three picks for the Chargers this year have all struggled. I mean, Adderley to stay healthy, Tillery on the field, and Pipkins, I mean, when he's been on the field, has been rough to watch. So not great for these guys. It should be, now that he has a full offseason, we should know a little bit more next year, because this year he was recovering for most of it. So the jury is still out on Tillery. You're right about that, but hopefully we can see more this season before the Chargers wrap things up. But we do have two more segments to get into. We do have to get into what went wrong, followed by what went right, coming up right after this. All right, guys, well, it's time to get into our patented segment that we do every single week after a Chargers game, and that is get into what went wrong. So this week, we don't have as much to talk about with what went wrong, because the Chargers, I mean, finally decided to put it all together. They couldn't have spread out the points maybe, you know, for a few different games. I mean, if the Chargers won this game by 1 point and they spread it out to the rest of their losses, I mean, they basically would be undefeated right now. But they decided to do it all in one game. But that's, of course, why we have John Kegley here to tell us what went wrong. And I have some stuff, too, and so does David Drogemeyer. But we always start with the expert, John Kegley. So, John, in a game where the Chargers absolutely smoked the Jaguars, what did you find wrong with the performance?
Some pretty bad tackling, especially at the beginning of the game, letting Leonard Fournette break through some tackles. Some of the wide receivers were breaking through some tackles. That first drive, it looked really ugly. They started picking it up later on, but even as the game went on, there were certain guys that still were making bad tackles. You got to give Brandon Faison credit, because with his bad coverage that he had on a lot of plays, he was still able to make a lot of tackles, but there was so many missed tackles, arm tackles on Leonard Fournette in that first drive. It really upset me. And then Hunter Henry dropping some easy completions, even though one was a diving catch, but he's known for making those. It was in his hands and he dropped it. But there was one that was easily just perfectly thrown by Phillip Rivers and he dropped it. Stuff like that cannot happen with Hunter Henry. And that really bothered me. And I could not wait to bring it up on the show.
Yeah, I mean, if there was any guy that I think would get somewhat of a pass with that, I would think it would be Hunter Henry. But it is shocking when you see him. I mean, the second one is like you're shocked when you see it, just because, I mean, he's wide open, has a chance to run and get some yards after the catch and a first down, and it just goes right through his hands. Luckily, it ends up leading to Austin Ekeler, you know, getting a 84-yard screen pass for a touchdown. But so it didn't end up being too bad for the Chargers. But I know Jalen Guyton had a drop too. It was pretty contested. It looked like the defender might have got a piece of it. But another beautifully thrown deep ball by Phillip Rivers.
That went right through his incomplete. Hands, man. I'm sorry. He had to catch that ball.
I mean, that he should have caught it. He should have caught it for sure. But, I mean, that's expecting production out of the Chargers' third wide receiver. And that player, again, in this game ends up with 2 targets and 0 catches. So that's expecting a lot. So I guess that is also what went wrong. Huh. But some drops, yeah, I mean, Phillip Rivers Day, if he catches that diving catch right there, I mean, if he catches the wide open catch and Jalen Guyton catches that ball, that's 3 more completions for Phillip Rivers. Obviously, he loses one with the Austin Ekeler screen pass, but, I mean, his game would have been even more efficient. So he had some really good throws, and even the incompletions a lot of times probably should have been caught. But let's go ahead and get into what else went wrong in this game, and I have a few things, and my biggest bone to pick in this game has to be with Desmond King after the game that he had. A lot of you would probably say, what did he do? I mean, well, besides the 4th down penalty that ends up giving the Jaguars a 1st down, which obviously on 4th down, you absolutely cannot get a penalty and allow them to convert it that way. Make a guy make a catch. try to do the best you can, but do not commit a penalty on fourth down. But my biggest bone is with the punt returning of Desmond King. So early in the game, Desmond King goes to field the punt. He tries to catch it on the sideline, and he kind of bobbled it as he went out of bounds. And I'm just sitting here like, don't catch that and don't bobble it. I mean, as bad as we feel about this right now, I cannot see you bobbling that catch. So later on in the game, he gets a punt return, ends up bouncing it out, goes backwards a little bit, and doesn't make the most out of the play, which is fine. I mean, you take that with the big playability that he has, and at least he caught it. But the next punt return by Desmond King, once again, is muffed by him trying to make a jumping catch along the sideline. The ball ends up going out of bounds, but for a team that was getting throttled in the Jaguars, the worst case scenario is for you to muff a punt and give them an easy chance to score. And David, it's just crazy that, you know, it went from Desmond King, who muffed punts, to Troy Manpope. Then he muffs the punt. Now it's back to Desmond King, who comes in and immediately muffs a punt again. I mean, I just imagine a practice field where Ty Long's just raining down punts from everywhere, and wide receivers and running backs all over the field are just dropping them left and right. I mean, how can these be the two best guys on this team at catching punts, and they're both back here muffing punts?
Well, yeah, and for Desmond King, like, what the hell happened from last year? Like, I mean, this didn't happen last year when you were an All-Pro. Why has it changed this year? I mean, why can't you catch the football? I mean, and also, why are you making questionable decisions when, you know, there's a couple of punts where you shouldn't even be close to the ball and just let it bounce? I mean, I would be much, much more comfortable with him just letting the ball bounce and letting it get down. That's totally fine, because guess what? You still keep possession in that situation. You go to catch a ball, you muff it, you turn it over, which we've seen several times this year, and there you go. You thought you were getting the ball back, and nuh-uh. And so for me, one of my things that went wrong was kind of another special team snafu, but you allowed a fake punt. I mean, come on. How do you allow a fake punt in the NFL? I'm sorry. This is not Madden. This is not a video game. In the NFL, you should never, ever allow a fake punt to be successful, and the Chargers did that. I know we're nitpicking here, but that is definitely something that went wrong in this game.
And that is the second straight meeting against the Jaguars where they have pulled it off as well. How do you get fooled with that two times in a row?
Well, and they've been fooled by multiple teams this season. This is not the first fake punt the Chargers have seen this year. Last time you had Jatavis Brown trying to be out there in coverage, and they had the punt safe on. They literally were expecting a fake and still couldn't get it covered. I mean, it's one thing to allow a fake punt every once in a while, but when you're obviously way ahead of your opponent and they're punting like that and they have nothing to lose in their season, you should probably see it coming and not have an undrafted Jalen Guyton out there trying to cover this guy. I mean, that's such a hard position to put a rookie wide receiver in right there for Guyton, so it's hard to really put a lot of blame on him. But it just seems like every single time somebody runs a fake punt against the Chargers, it works. I mean, I don't know why teams don't do it every single week against them, because the success rate for that play against the Chargers is 100%, and it's just ridiculous that they keep allowing that. Just infuriating. I mean, a fake punt again, and when the other team's down by 3 scores and you're going to allow a fake punt. So another thing that I want to get to, which is kind of nitpicking a little bit, John, is just the Chargers still struggling to create turnovers. I would really like to see this Chargers defense get back to what we've seen in years past with all of the talent they have back there now. I mean, they're not really allowing a bunch, but the Chargers really should have created turnovers in this game. Gardner Minshew had put the ball on the deck 12 times going into this game, and the Chargers didn't get an interception or a fumble recovery. And I think for this defense to really be elite, they need to create more opportunities. In this game, the Jaguars offense was pretty conservative and made a couple of good plays, but you want to see them getting back to creating those game-changing turnovers that really were what this defense was known for a couple of years ago when they were maybe less talented.
Yes, especially when you have an offense that has struggled this year, you need to get those turnovers and give your offense easier points. And this is coming from someone that watches a lot of San Diego State games where their offense is just absolutely horrible, but their defense sets up the offense to get a field goal or easy touchdown. It's the difference in the game. It can work in the pros too. You get an interception and it's down at the 25-yard line of the opponent. That's only 25 yards you have to go. If we suck in the red zone like we usually do, we still get a field goal without having to pick up a first down. It's easy money. But like you said, we didn't get a single one in this game. We haven't really got many this year at all. And Minshew was getting out of the pocket a lot. They were allowing him to extend the plays, which usually allows for turnovers not to happen unless you're just a really stupid QB. But when you get out of the pocket, you tend to want to throw the ball away, or you end up finding someone that could be open and you just overthrow them. Letting him get outside the pocket on that pass rush was also something I think went wrong. You didn't keep him contained, and I think that's why you didn't get a lot of turnovers as well. But why don't we get fumbles either? Like, where are the big hits and the strips? So how come we're not getting those anymore? It's like we just try to wrap up on a tackle and we can't even do that right, and let alone get a fumble, an interception. What happened to this defense? They stop plays, but they don't make the big plays.
Yeah, when Derwin James brings a lot of that playmaking back, and you saw it on that fourth down play where he gets a big stop in the flat and just absolutely smokes Leonard Fournette, who never stood a chance, and that's what you love seeing from him. But you're right. I mean, to not have them put the ball on the ground, you really need to force turnovers, especially against really a really bad offense. And they let Gardner Minshew get out of the pocket a little bit too much. They could have had a better day because they did have some good pressure at times, but they were letting him get out of the pocket. But as far as letting him use his legs to really change the game, I thought they did a pretty good job of not letting any of those plays really turn into huge plays or really shift the game in any meaningful way. But that is going to wrap things up for what went wrong. We're going to get into a little bit of a brighter section of the show because we're getting into our what went right segment. And we have a bunch to talk about this week, which is nice. It's going to be hard to fit it all in because the Chargers absolutely just manhandled the Jaguars on Sunday. Coming up right after this. All right, guys, time to get into the final segment of the show, getting into what went right. And so much went right for the Chargers in this game. I mean, they had their best offensive and defensive game of the year statistically, at least as far as points allowed and points scored. So the Chargers had an overall dominant game. We talked about some of the stats yesterday, just being able to rack up 525 yards of total offense, getting 195 rushing yards in this game, which is always nice. But one of the big things I saw, not just running the football and getting a bunch of yards, but 13 rushing first downs. I mean, the Chargers basically did whatever they want. And the offensive line is who I want to start giving credit to, because Melvin Gordon did a lot with the carries, but they were opening up huge holes all day long, David. And this offense is totally different when they have that confidence running the football.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if you can run the ball effectively, then everything else is set up, you know, off of that. You know, you set up the pass, you set up the play action. I mean, it just opens things up. And, you know, like obviously you mentioned, it just helps you keep the chains moving. When you can do that, then you get down to the red zone and, you know, you can make things happen. And, you know, in this game, that's one of the things that went right, is their success in the red zone, Daniel. I mean, it's been forever since the Chargers have got into the red zone, or the goal zone, as some people like to call it. And they come out with touchdowns. And, you know, they did that very effectively in this game. They gave it to Melvin Gordon on the one touchdown, gave it to Derek Watt, and there another touchdown there too. I mean, love the success in the red zone. It's been a nice change of pace to see them get there, get the touchdowns, and see the points just rack up on the scoreboard.
Well, and that's one of the things we've needed to see from the Chargers all season long, John, that we haven't, is them scoring in the red zone. And what that does is it just puts teams away. Like, the Chargers just put the Jaguars away. And that's another thing that went right, is they got off to such a hot start. But it doesn't get like this. The game doesn't get like this, though, unless you're scoring touchdowns. I mean, if the Chargers were settling for field goals, at best case scenario, it looks like the game against the Packers, where you just kind of keep chipping away and holding them off and never really feeling safe about it. In this game, the Chargers got off to a hot start. 7 of their first 8 possessions end in points. And that's something that, at least, I know it's towards the end of the season and the game doesn't matter, but it is nice to see them correcting some of the things that have absolutely plagued them all season long. And it's also infuriating that they waited till now to do it.
It's definitely infuriating. They fixed so many problems in this game with this offense and with some, like, just game situations and play calling. And you did it against a team that was pretty bad, and you needed other teams to help you stay in the playoff race. And so now you decide to do it. And then when you do it, you still get eliminated from the playoffs. It's very frustrating. But the fact is that they did it. And maybe this could be a learning curve. Maybe this is something for next year, where they find out they can learn things. Like, for example, if you watch the press conference, Anthony Lynn said that Thomas Davis helped with creating that wide open touchdown to Hunter Henry. They were at practice, and Thomas Davis told Anthony Lynn what he would do on that play from a defensive perspective, and that helped switch the play around. And Thomas Davis was in Anthony Lynn's ear on the sideline going, oh, here we go, this is my play. And then when that play happened for a touchdown, Thomas Davis was just in his ear like, I told you, I called that play. And it works when you actually listen to veterans and make adjustments. It works. And so the fact they made adjustments helps a lot. And I also want to mention that you can't go into the what went right segment without mentioning that Lamblock didn't watch the game. So that means there's no curse. And Austin Eckler absolutely went off going for 100 yards rushing, 100 yards receiving. And that is the 29th time that's happened in NFL history.
The 29th time it's happened and only the second time by the Chargers. First since 1985. We talked about that yesterday. But John, how just important is Austin Eckler to this team and how explosive he is? I mean, doing what he was able to do. I would like to know how many of those 29 guys, John, did it on 12 touches. That's what I want to know, because that's just ridiculous. And I think you saw what the future of this team is. I mean, there's going to be no Melvin Gordon. Austin Eckler took the first handoff on the game, and he was the best running back all day long, whether he was running the football or catching it out of the backfield. He is probably their best offensive player and most consistent offensive player this entire season. He's probably the MVP of this team.
He has to be the MVP of this team, and he is very important to this team. You have to get him in a contract extension if you're me. If in this offseason, it's got to be Bosa and Eckler that get contract extensions, because you cannot let a player like this walk
and
at
Henry.
Some point. He is so very explosive and makes the big plays and changes the game. If you can get any running back, you can get anybody to replace Melvin Gordon personally, if you're me. You can get anybody to replace him with the role he has. But the role that Austin Eckler plays in this offense is going to be very hard to get. Someone that can run the ball really well, can catch the ball out of the backfield, make people miss in open field. Melvin Gordon has a lot of things he needs to work on. There's not really many things that Eckler needs to work on. So I think Eckler is probably the most important piece to this offense besides the quarterback.
And I can't remember who posted on Twitter, but I saw somewhere that Austin Eckler has 129 targets this year and doesn't have a drop. He's a running back. That's ridiculous. And I think Austin Eckler, especially lately, I mean, he's been put behind some pretty tough rushing plays where there hasn't been very much going. I mean, you saw what he did once he had that open space in that first carry of the game.
So, Daniel, that was from Field Yates. He says on Twitter, at Field Yates, Chargers running back Austin Eckler is on pace to become the fourth running back with 1,000 receiving yards in a season in the modern era of the NFL. He's gone 128 targets without a drop. Reliable, explosive, and a game changer. And Field Yates, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, Field Yates, you're allowed to come on the show now. Thank you for appreciating him. But, I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous. To put something on tape today that LT never did in a Chargers uniform, you absolutely sign that guy up as long as you can. And for Hunter Henry, David, I mean, I know the drops are tough. I mean, he only gets two catches on the day, but he does get that wide open touchdown that John talked about. He would have had four receptions had he caught everything thrown his way, and then maybe it's looking like an even better day. But in that play, they scheme a play to get Hunter Henry open, and he catches a big 30-yard touchdown. That's what you need to see, because Hunter Henry is so important to this offense, and they made him a focal point again this game.
And that's exactly what we've been asking for. I mean, whenever, you know, Hunter Henry is in a position, whenever Hunter Henry's getting the football, the Chargers are in a better position to win football games. I mean, he just helps this offense be just so much better. I mean, over the middle of the field, he's usually very sure-handed. I mean, another great game for Hunter Henry. Love to see him get a touchdown to add to those stats. Speaking of touchdowns, we can't talk about what went right without mentioning Mike Williams getting his first touchdown on the year. I mean, Mike Williams doing big things again. I mean, unbelievable to see all the big plays that he's accumulated throughout this season. And to see him finally get in the end zone on a, you know, physical contested catch, it just, you know, you just think to yourself, there's no other way. I mean, this is what he's done all year. For him to get his touchdown in that manner, it's just, it's got to be rewarding for Mike Williams and for Phillip Rivers and just the Chargers offense. We know that he's been battling all year long with a knee injury, and to see him get rewarded with that touchdown is definitely really nice.
Yeah, and I mean he had to get that touchdown. I mean, there's no way he was going to go the entire season without getting into the end zone. But to be leading the NFL coming into this, averaging 20.5 yards per catch, and then to actually raise that in this game, and two catches for 63 yards, averaging over 30 yards per catch in this game, even though it's just two catches because it was very spread around in this game. But yes, he needed to do that. And we haven't even talked about Keenan Allen, who just has a quiet 5 for 83 and draws a pass interference in the end zone that sets up a 1 yard Melvin Gordon touchdown. And Melvin Gordon ran the ball good in this game as well. I mean, averaged about 4.5 yards per carry and looked pretty good, looked decisive, but he was running through some really big holes. And Austin Eckler just seemed to be making more out of those runs. So I do want to just end this by saying, how do you not talk about Phillip Rivers, who has a huge bounce back game in this one, and just this hugely efficient 16 of 22, the 3 touchdowns, the 0 interceptions, and just 0 turnovers by this Chargers team has to be part of what went right, because it's
Philip
awesome.
River. That's right. Phillip Rivers said, "Happy birthday to me, Daniel."
Yeah, exactly. And Phillip Rivers just putting on a performance and talking trash the whole way down the field. That's what went right for me this week. I mean, seeing Phillip Rivers, the confident Phillip Rivers that looks like there's no quit in him and that he absolutely wants to keep playing football. That's the Phillip Rivers I saw on his 38th birthday on Sunday. A guy that wanted to show people on his 38th birthday that he still has it. And I saw something on the lightning round saying, you know, now the Chargers are going to reward players for late season heroics that they shouldn't. But if that was directed at Phillip Rivers, I mean, I think that Phillip Rivers showed a lot in this game that he absolutely still has what it takes to be a quarterback in the league. I mean, those throws that he makes, you either have them or you don't. I mean, the protection was actually good in this game, and he performed. I mean, over an 80 QBR in this game. Tyrod Taylor gets in for a drive, even with him running the football, which is part of QBR. He still had a 26 grade in his QBR, so that's not great. And I know it's, you know, a couple drives, and that's really unfair to Tyrod Taylor, but I understand. But Phillip Rivers absolutely showed why he's the starter in this game, why he's still the team's best option. And if they still think they have a Super Bowl with this roster, if they can add pieces and add depth, I don't see it getting done anyway next season if it's not Phillip Rivers. You're either going to get a good year out of Phillip Rivers, or you're going to get a developmental year with another quarterback that you draft, a young guy, or you sign a Band-Aid like Andy Dalton, and nobody wants to see that. Phillip Rivers playing like this is a good sign for this team, and that's why it's and what went right. But that is going to wrap up things for today's show. Tomorrow, guys, is Crossover Wednesday, so we're going to be talking with the Locked On Vikings podcast about this upcoming game this week, and that's a really cool matchup. You don't get to play the Vikings very often. Unfortunately, it's not in prime time anymore, but we're excited to get over there with Locked On Vikings and cover that for you guys. But until then, guys, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On LAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing wherever you get your podcast from. You can find the Locked On Chargers podcast there. If you want to get on the show, make sure to call into the Locked On Chargers voicemail line. We'll be doing another voicemail show on Friday. The number is 323-524-7924. Every Chargers voicemail gets on the show, and we have a couple more already, so we need a few more for the show on Friday and what you guys want to see against the Vikings this weekend. But until tomorrow, guys, we will talk to you later. Take it easy and go Bolts.